Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Wednesday, Thanksgiving Eve, live in Los Angeles. It's The Herd, brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. We will keep you abreast of the Matt Nagy situation. That game's on Fox tomorrow. I think Detroit upsets Chicago. That's my guess. I think they're getting really close. Yesterday was a weird situation where Matt Nagy canceled his meetings at night, met with ownership. There was a story out there that he's going to be fired after the game. There's another story in Chicago today. The locker room is unsettled because there's no clarity with it. So, you know, players just, you got to point them in a direction. You got to give players a feeling, do this or don't do that. And there's lack of communication, so don't be surprised if and Andy Dalton's now starting, which half the locker room may not believe in. If the Bears lay an egg tomorrow, don't be surprised.
I'm not generally a fan of firing coaches midseason unless there is severe dysfunction or issues like the Raiders situation. I just think it's very disruptive, and I think it's on the front office and the ownership to just kind of keep things on the rails until the end of the season. I get it for college, it's a little different because you want to get ahead of hires.
Yeah.
But for the NFL, like, these coordinators not making decisions are really focusing on that until the end of the season if they're looking for those jobs anyway. But it's looking like it's getting a little wild in Chicago.
So here we go. All of our odds provided by FoxBet Sportsbook off a winning week are Blazing Five.
That's a hot one.
Let's blaze it up.
Fire it up.
It's Collins Blazing Five. Raiders and Cowboys.
You know, I take one big favorite a week. I'll take the Cowboys -7.5. Tyron Smith, ankle. He's going to start at left tackle. Dak at home with Tyron Smith wins most of his games. CeeDee Lamb practiced today. He's probably back with Michael Gallup and Cedric Wilson. Dak Prescott at home this year has been a different quarterback with 118 passer rating off a disappointing loss. And right now the Raiders have everything from tragedy to chaos to an interim coach. They are now converting in the last 2 weeks 12% of third downs. This is a free-fall Raider team. Dallas gets healthy and wins 30-20. Swallow the points.
Steelers at Bengals.
I like to take Mike Tomlin as an underdog. He may be the NFL's best underdog coach. I'll take the Steelers and the points here. By the way, they get very healthy. TJ Watt's back. Joe Hayden's back. Minkah Fitzpatrick is back. By the way, they are 0-4 when TJ Watt doesn't play. He is the MVP of this team. And Big Ben in the last five games is actually, because of Najee Harris and that young offensive line improving, Big Ben's played well. Last five games, 9 touchdowns, no picks. In fact, he's the only starting quarterback in the league without a pick in the last five games. So I think Pittsburgh wins straight out. Take the points, 26-24.
Jets at Texans.
I like the Texans -2.5. When Tyrod Taylor is playing quarterback, they don't make a ton of mistakes. He can run for touchdowns. He can pass for him. They're 2-1 when he plays. I think they're playing really hard. They're in a lot of their games. And I think they're going to beat the Jets. I would take the Texans. By the way, the Jets defense, this team is so bad defensively. They're last in virtually everything. They're allowing quarterbacks to have 108 passer rating. And again, Tyrod Taylor has 6 touchdowns this year. Pass for 3s, rush for 3. Zach Wilson will be the third different quarterback in 3 weeks. There is no continuity in games. I'm going to take Houston to win and cover the spread 30-23.
Buccaneers at Colts.
I like the Colts at home getting a field goal. Brady's not the same quarterback since he arrived in Tampa on the road. He's great at home. He has the comfort. He moved his family. He needs that comfort at home. Didn't used to be the case. He's not been a good road quarterback. And by the way, the Colts take the ball away and don't give it up. They lead the NFL in turnover differential, and Brady has had a little interception problem. Carson Wentz, 97 passer rating this year, and it's getting better because Jonathan Taylor is number one in virtually every running back data point, right? We thought Buffalo's defense was great. He ran through it. The Bucs are coming off a short week. Also, Antonio Brown may not play, and they are 2-3 without AB this year. Vitavia's hurt. Their guard, Ali Marpet, excellent, is hurt. I got Indianapolis winning the game outright 27-21.
Chargers at Broncos.
My favorite bet of the week. Like it, I love it. Broncos plus 2.5. Listen, the Chargers have a bad defense. And Denver is going to run the football and control time of possession. And Denver's held their opponents under 20 three of their last four games. The Broncos defense, top three scoring defense in the league. Bridgewater doesn't make mistakes. Three games without a pick. And the Chargers can't defend the run. They've not won consecutive games since week 4 and 5. There are certain things in this league you got to do. Got to be able to run the football at some point. Now that Pittsburgh is, it's a different team. And you got to stop the run. Or you sit in the sidelines and watch the other offense. So Justin Herbert, he'll win, he'll lose. He'll win, he'll lose. This feels a lot like, to me, the Minnesota game where Justin Herbert's going to end up watching a lot of this. I'm going to take Denver straight out to win it 28-24 over a team I love watching play. They're just not a great team yet, the Chargers. So a couple of favorites and three underdogs. Favorite Cowboys, favorite Texans, and then I'll take the Steelers points, the Colts points, and the Broncos with points. I know, everybody thinks I like the Chargers. I bet against them all year. I've had great success. And with that, the voice of college football at our network, Joel Klatt, who is getting ready with Gus to do the game of the year in college football, Michigan, Ohio State, Saturday at noon Eastern on Fox.
How are we doing? Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So Lou Holtz used to say it's very difficult to get the same game 2 weeks in a row. There's girlfriends, there's midterms,
sure.
There's limited practice in college. So Ohio State plays offensively the game of the year.
Yeah.
And by the way, they were a good matchup against Michigan State in their secondary.
Yep.
Michigan has been a very good football team this year, outplayed the team that beat a Michigan State. This feels competitive to me.
It could be. I try to, you know, there's been so many years where I'm like, man, this is Michigan's best chance. This is Michigan's best chance. They certainly match up better this year than in previous years, specifically the fact that they can get to the quarterback. These two pass rushers now are excellent. Aiden Hutchinson on one side.
He's
David,
going to be a top 10, 12, 15 pick.
No doubt. Absolutely. Probably one of the best edge rushers in the draft. And then on the other side, a guy that no one talks about but also has double-digit sacks is David Ajabo. And he's excellent and has really come on in the back half of the year. Ohio State is a pass-oriented offense.
Yep.
They may bristle that I would say something like that, but the data backs it up. On base downs, first down and 10, second and 6 or shorter, they're throwing the ball over 60% of the time. And probably rightly so when you got a quarterback like Stroud and the wide receiver core that they have. All three of these guys are first-round talents.
He's gotten better.
No doubt.
I mean, against Oregon, I was like, I don't know if he'll start next year with that 5-star kid coming in, but something clicked, and he was great in the last couple weeks.
And there is a constant to when he is great and when he struggles a little bit. That constant is making him uncomfortable in the pocket. They've got a great offensive line, and in fact, they've got four tackles that start. They move two tackles down to guard, so they got four offensive tackles. They're a great pass-blocking offensive line. And when they keep him clean, it's over. It's like Brady back in 08. You know, like if you don't get to Brady, it's over. You're not defending these wide receivers for any amount of time in the back end. And the games in which they've struggled, Nebraska, Penn State, even early in the season against Minnesota and Oregon, what they did is they made him uncomfortable. They gave him different looks, and they presented some pressure, whether it was in the interior or off the edge, to make him move out of the pocket. That's what he does not do well as a young player yet. When it's clean, he's as good as anybody out there. So this matchup, I would suggest that Michigan is one of the three or four worst matchups for Ohio State in the country. Because of the pass rush.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they're going to win. I'm just saying that this matchup feels like Michigan has a bit of a chance versus previous seasons that we've seen when they had a defense that ran one coverage and man coverage, and if they couldn't defend for long, it was over, right? This is a different style.
I said we love redemption stories in America, and Mel Tucker is going to sign with Michigan State, and James Franklin says, I'm staying at Penn State, and Harbaugh in the offseason, who could have gotten an NFL job, he got to the Super Bowl, he reworked his deal and took less. 8-9 years ago, the Big Ten was a tire fire, and today it is a solid number two conference.
No doubt.
I think it's got excellent recruiters Mel Tucker, Harbaugh.
Yep. Ryan Day is the best in the bunch.
And Franklin.
Franklin recruits well.
I look at the Big Ten today, and it's not the SEC to me yet, but I see some really good quarterback play. I see excellent coaching. I see some really good recruiters. And that James Franklin move is like, no, I'm not going to live on the beach in L.A. I'm not going to Baton Rouge. I think it's significant.
The one word that you didn't mention is revenue. They're the only conference in the country that matches up with and it even at times exceeds the revenue of the SEC, and that's because of the footprint that they're in, the alumni base that they have in that conference. Overall, the largest alumni base for a conference is the Big Ten. That's why the ratings are so big when you watch Ohio State games and Michigan games.
Those are big schools.
Huge, huge alumni bases, and because of that, they have an enormous amount of revenue. Now you're seeing that. So James Franklin signs a 10-year extension, 10. And the buyout language is such that the school really has no option. The buyout language is this, and you have to read down through the contract. Basically, he's going to get paid $8 million times however many years are left on the contract. So think about that for a moment. That means like in 6 years, if he goes 7-5 and they want to make a move, in 6 years, they would still have to pay him $32 million not coach. Mm. So this is an incredibly friendly contract for James Franklin. They can't move off of this. Penn State can't, which means that he can put down roots. By the way, let's not just pass over the fact that we've got two coaches that are making a push here late in the season that have made their entire career on standing pat and being confident and comfortable where they're at. And that's Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State and Kyle Whittingham at Utah. Think about that. So there's these two guys, long tenured guys. I played against Mike Gundy. That's crazy. Like his first year was 2005 when I was a senior. He's been there forever. And here they are making a late push. Utah doing Utah things late in the season. Oklahoma State has a chance at a playoff. Yeah. And I think other coaches around the country look at that and they say to themselves, you know what? I can make a lot of money at my current job. Why do I have to go chase it? Why? In particular, at places that you might get fired in 3 years if it doesn't work out at the top end.
Yeah.
So I think these are smart moves. Credit to Penn State. Credit to James Franklin. Congratulations on a great contract.
Okay, so let's look at the college football, the playoff seeding. You know, what's interesting, people get all worked up, but Georgia and Bama are going to play.
Yes.
So Georgia could lose and they'll still end up in there. But
probably,
I think if Bama loses, they're out. And if
well,
now,
the only scenario, if you don't mind me interrupting.
Well, if Michigan loses, then Bama has a chance to be a four.
If Bama loses the Iron Bowl but beats Georgia.
Oh, Lord.
I'm just saying, that's plausible, right? So they could be a two loss, but they would be an SEC champ. They would go, even with two losses as an SEC champ. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Okay, so there is an avenue for Alabama, even if they were to lose one of their next two games. Now, having said that, everyone's like, oh, we did it. The group of five is in the top four. Cincinnati, all they got to do is win. Hold on a second. And I'm not arguing that Cincinnati shouldn't go. All I'm saying is, ye of small memory, in 2014, in the first iteration of this playoff, TCU was included in the top four in the next to last poll. You know what they did? They won by 50 that week and were dropped out of the top four.
I remember it.
So just be careful. All I'm saying is, Cincinnati fans, this is not in your hands. Even if you win out, there are scenarios where, like I said, Alabama loses Iron Bowl, beats Georgia. I mean, there are all sorts of... What if Oklahoma State rolls out there and begins to do to Oklahoma this week and potentially Baylor next week what they have done to everyone over the last 3 weeks, which is play incredible defense and win by upwards of 2 and 3 scores?
Let me throw this at you. And so, Bama doesn't have Georgia's defense, nor do they have Ohio State's offense. But between the two, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
If Ohio State played Bama today, a couple years ago, was it last year or the year? I think it was the year before, a couple years ago, I made my biggest college football bet ever. Everybody loved Ohio State over Clemson, and I said, I get Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm going to take Clemson. It's my biggest college football bet, and the Buckeye fans, lucky, blah, blah, blah. You know, this has never happened in 10 years. We're sleeping on Alabama. I still get the best. I get the best coach. I get a terrific young quarterback. It's a young team. I get the best left tackle. He's going to have time to throw. It's a younger team because they've lost so much talent. But Saban's teams get better over time, and everybody looks at Arkansas and goes, well, I mean, they struggle with Arkansas. Arkansas's a real team now.
Not bad.
I bet against...
You know, but I mean, this is not a passing juggernaut, and they gave up well over 300 yards of passing to KJ Jefferson.
Tomorrow, Ohio State-Bama, who do you take?
Where's the game?
That close.
Right, yeah. So I'm acknowledging your point. Where's the game?
On Bama.
I think that it's pretty clear that Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State are the three best teams in college football, with Georgia having separated themselves out a little bit, and Ohio State clearly being great at their top end when they play like they did last week, and Alabama being interesting. And this is what I think you're talking to. This is the point that you're trying to make, is that we're sleeping on the fact that they're not potentially dominant, but that doesn't mean that they're going to lose, right? Is that what you're trying to say?
Because I don't trust.
This is not Bama last year, certainly.
No.
But that doesn't mean that we should just think like, oh, they're going to lose to Georgia with Stetson Bennett. Are we convinced that Stetson Bennett's going to beat Georgia? Or excuse me, beat Alabama? I don't know.
I'm not
convinced either.
No.
In particular, when Alabama will have to win and Georgia will be like, well, we're in regardless. Think about that dynamic. Who's to say Bama doesn't beat Georgia?
Okay, so I just want an update on this stuff. So one of the reasons I haven't talked a lot about the LSU opening or the USC opening, because I don't believe the reports.
Okay.
So I don't think Jimbo Fisher or Lincoln Riley are leaving their very good jobs.
I agree.
If I said, I'll give you the program and you tell me who you think the coach will be.
Oh, gosh.
This morning. I know, LSU.
that's a really tough one. Campbell.
Okay. All right. Iowa State guy. Florida.
Bill Napier.
Yeah, they like him. USC.
Dave Aranda.
From L.A. Baylor guy. He's only won 1 year.
I understand that, and people have talked about he's very a deep thinker. He's not what you would think of when you think of L.A., but I've heard that that's getting some momentum.
Very interesting. So... let me throw this out there. I think both of us share in this, that we think Brian Kelly, it was really turbulent his first few years. They had a tragedy. He can be animated on the sidelines.
Yeah, remember how angry he would get with his quarterbacks?
And we don't like that. At the NFL level,
he's changed. He's evolved.
He's funnier. He's lighter on the sidelines. Does Notre Dame have a shot to get in?
Yes.
I'll kind of tell you something.
There's no doubt they do.
If Notre Dame gets in with this team, which is a rebuild on the O-line, this team should not be... I think Brian Kelly, again, we are sleeping on this guy.
So when I did their game, remember earlier in the year I did the Wisconsin-Notre Dame game in Chicago. And since we were so close to the campus and we never get to be on campus because we don't do their home games, I thought to myself, this is going to be my best chance to do in-person meetings with Brian Kelly. So I flew in a day early and made sure we drove down to South Bend from Chicago just so that I could be around, because you only get so much on conference calls or on Zoom calls.
Right, right.
And even though I had called Brian Kelly's games before, I had never sat with him in the room and done a meeting with him prior to a big game. And so I wanted to take advantage of that opportunity. And I was blown away by what seems to me to be like this transition, a guy very confident in who he is, where he is, how his teams are going to win. And he was very straightforward with me about the fact that they were going to do everything that they could and put together a game plan, but this was not his year. And I was almost taken back. And he wasn't saying that they were, hey, we're going to lose to Wisconsin. He wasn't trying to talk me off that ledge.
Game.
He was just trying to say, like, this is not the team that we're building towards. We've got some great pieces, and he loves Kyle Hamilton, and their tight end is absolutely amazing. There's no doubt. But they're unsettled at quarterback. They're developing on the offensive line and haven't been as dominant as what they have been in the last couple of years. And he was adamant. He was like, listen, this is a development year for us.
Yeah.
Well, so in a development year, here's the Irish 10-1. How about that? This guy has done a remarkable job, and I think that guys like Brian Kelly don't get the credit that they deserve. A guy like Mike Gundy has not gotten the credit that he deserves, or what Kyle Whittingham does on a year-in and year-out basis. And everyone goes to like, well, who's the hottest name, and who's done it for 1 year, and all these names get thrown out there, the lower-level guys, and here's this guy at Notre Dame that has won more games than anybody in that position in the school's history. He's also got now more 10-win seasons in a row than any other coach in their history. People don't understand that. Yeah. I say to themselves, hey, do you know that Notre Dame is currently on their longest consecutive year streak of double-digit wins. They're like, no, 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 that's not true. It's absolutely true. I understand that there's more games, but Notre Dame is in a sweet spot right now with Brian Kelly.
Yeah, people don't realize this. So when I used to work at the other company, and I don't know what happened to it when I left, not good things probably, but when I first got there, it was like 17 years ago, that company aired about 50 college games. Now it's 500. So what has happened is that if you wanted to get on TV in the Lou Holtz era, a lot of times, a lot of the traditional northern powers, Penn State, Washington, Nebraska, Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame, they were on television every week.
Sure.
Then we started airing all the games. And the kids in these states like Georgia are like, I don't need to go north.
That's right.
I can stay with my friends. And so the expansion of the television opportunities in college, I mean, Boise State's on seven times a year.
Yeah, so Georgia and Oklahoma sued the NCAA in the mid-80s in order to expand basically the rights and get the rights from the NCAA into the conferences so that they could sell their own games.
So since this has happened, northern powers outside of Ohio State have mostly shrunk, and the powers in college football have mostly been warmer powers. So I think it's harder to win in the North now because you don't have dominant television exclusivity. I mean, Notre Dame had its own network.
Sure.
And so I think it's harder to win now at Notre Dame. More kids will say, I'm just going to stay home. It's warmer weather. My girlfriend's here. My friends are here.
I even remember, let's go back, like, you know, so right before I got to high school, let's call it the mid-90s, right? So I'm in junior high in like 94, 95. And I remember it would be huge news. I grew up in Colorado. And if someone got a letter from Notre Dame, it was like, oh, they're being recruited by Notre Dame. And it was a big deal. I don't know if it carries that cachet now, which speaks to what you're trying to talk about the difficulty they have in recruiting. It's not quite what it once was. Plus, they've got the academics. They've got the weather. And
the Big Ten's the best it's been in a long time. So those northern powers are stealing some of their recruits.
So what Brian Kelly has done and built at Notre Dame should not be overlooked. They absolutely have a path to the playoff. If Cincinnati were to trip up, like let's say next week against Houston, and Houston's won 10 in a row, by the way, under Dana Holgorsen. If the Big 12 splits it out and their champion has two losses, you know, there's all these scenarios where you're sitting there and you're like, well, yeah, Notre Dame would be the fourth team to go to the playoff, and here we would be on a down developmental year for Notre Dame with Brian Kelly in the playoff. It's certainly plausible.
2 years ago, somebody at USC said, who would you hire as coach? And I said, well, go out and weaken your rival and strengthen you. I'd hire Brian Kelly. And they're like, hey, do you think he's a good fit out here? I'm like, he's won everywhere.
Everywhere. I think he would be a terrific fit. Yeah. And I don't think he would leave because, like I said, man, that week was maybe more eye-opening to me than any week that I've had on campus, in front of a coach. It was a terrific meeting. I loved sitting there with Brian Kelly.
All right, Klatt, great job. Michigan, Ohio State, game of the year in college football. Yep. Can't wait. Good seeing you, buddy.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Joy. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Enjoy your week with your families and enjoy the football.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Saturday, there's games, then there's the game. It's the latest chapter in college football's ultimate rivalry. Number 2 Ohio State faces number 5 Michigan in the Big Noon Saturday game of the week. Coverage begins at 10 Eastern with Big Noon kickoff live from Ann Arbor. Then it's the game Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Those Big Ten games have gotten massive ratings. I remember years and years ago, ESPN decided to put a college football game on a Saturday night. We always played them in the early morning in the day. They put a big, and it got huge numbers. Everybody was like, oh, people watch Saturday night college football. I thought it was date night. And now we decided we're going to put games on at noon because now all the games are getting pushed back, and it's been a big hit. Networks, here's a reminder, college football works. Just put the games on. People like it. You think about these Big Ten schools. Wisconsin's got like 40,000 students, and Ohio State's massive, and Michigan's big, and these schools, Nebraska, they're just sending out graduates all over the country. Big Ten games, as long as they're competent, get the Rose Bowl used to get a 10 rating in New York because there's Michigan and Ohio State grads all over New York City. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Also, people like to watch rivalries, even if they're not personally, emotionally invested. When you know that the stakes are high for everyone in the game and all of the alumni watching, it just feels like it matters more.
And also, it feels like joy. Because of the mobility of professional athletes, we don't feel like we have as many professional rivalries.
Yes, the mobility, I think also just because of the access that we have to every single game. I think younger fans are more fans of players than they are necessarily of the teams.
Yeah.
And that kind of moves the needle as far as the hostility goes for rivalries. So it's been 728 days, but the game is back, and Ohio State will face Michigan, their rival, this Saturday. And Buckeyes head coach Ryan Day said this is what they live for.
Well, we work it year round. You know, every day we work it. You know, we work it in the off season. We work it on Fridays during the weight room. You know, we have so many different things that we talk to our guys about. We have, you know, our sessions in the preseason and in spring. We have meetings about it. So we just constantly talk about it, and we talk about it in recruiting. This is our number one goal here at Ohio State, is to beat the team up north, period. There is a lot of pressure, and that's the way you want it. You know, you want this game with everything riding on it at their place. It's going to be, you know, wild environment, and again, that's why you come to Ohio State.
And the opposite's true in the NFL. No game's bigger than the other game. We got a game next week, on to Cincinnati. And in college, it's not like that.
You have to have a shorter
Well, you recruit
memory.
Against your rivals.
Right.
Like, so it's really important. So many kids, there's a lot of kids that'll come down to Michigan or Ohio State. So winning that game and making that call to the wide receiver can be the difference getting him and not getting him.
Yeah, I mean, I think divisional rivalries or divisional games in the NFL, those feel like they have a little more edge to them when you play the same team a lot. But this college is just different. It's just a different energy when it comes to the rivalries. And they're storied. You know, they have real animosity to them. They didn't play Michigan last season, obviously, because of COVID. And at the start of the season, Jim Harbaugh said his team would beat Ohio State and win the Big Ten or die trying. It's a little hyperbole there, but the Bucks have dominated the rivalry recently. They haven't lost since 2011. Ohio State is ranked at 2, Michigan at 5, and the winner will go to the Big Ten title game and be in position to make it to the college football playoff. So aside from the rivalry, there is obviously a lot on the line here. Coverage begins Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern with Big Noon Kickoff on Fox, and Ohio State is currently favored by 8, according to Fox Bet.
I think I'll take Michigan on that. I think it's going to be competitive. I think Michigan is a really good football team. They can. I think there's going to be a lot of points. I'll say that. I think there's going to be some points.
Well, multiple reports yesterday indicated that the Jets will start Zach Wilson against the Texans on Sunday, and it's good that he's ready to go, because Field Yates of ESPN reported they placed Joe Flacco and Mike White on the COVID reserve list. Josh
Chaos.
Johnson on the practice squad is now in line to be on the active roster for Week 12. Flacco is unvaccinated, so he will be out 10 days if he tested positive and 5 days if he was an unvaccinated close contact. Robert Saleh said this morning, when someone offers a 6th-round pick for a player of Joe's caliber, there is no risk. Well, I think we see now what the the risk of that was.
Mean, if you went back the last 3 years in the NFL, give me an organization that has been more chaotic than the Jets.
The Lions.
I guess.
The Texans. But what are you competing for? I think that the Jets are just louder about it because it's New York, and the Jets just, you know, it's easier to take shots at the Jets. You don't really want to take shots at Detroit. Yeah. Texans is like a weird situation, and, you know, they have been competitive recently, so it's not like it was, you know, a consistent amount of dysfunction.
Yeah.
And then obviously the Browns were in that caliber up until recently for many, many years. But it just feels like the Jets can't get right. It's always something with the Jets. And I think you only change something like that with a culture builder. Like, I think that's the difference to me with Cleveland, why I take Cleveland seriously. And in the past, I haven't. Because it's not like they've always been devoid of talent. It's just like you don't have any identity. There's always something going on. It's always loud. It's always something. And I think when you have a really strong culture, even if you're struggling or you show signs that you're building a culture, like obviously Detroit is not very good, but we talk about it all the time. They're in games. They're one possession games that they're losing. They play hard. Let's all just compartmentalize that Steeler
game. They've got good, great left tackle, a great young tight end. They've got some pieces here. I still think the Lions should trade out of the number one spot. Somebody needs a quarterback. Okay, somebody needs a quarterback. Trade out of it. Get multiple picks. You could get 3-4 first-round picks. Could you get 5 picks in the first 2 rounds? And for Detroit, that's 5 new starters. You're watching Pittsburgh. They drafted 4 offensive players in a row to start the draft. All of them have been hits. The tight end, the running back, and the 2 offensive linemen.
Yeah, you have to hit it. I would not.
I'd go Goff one more year. There's nothing out there in college that blows me away.
Yeah, I mean, if this was a strong quarterback draft, totally obviously you would feel differently. But
Lawrence,
they need so much that it might make sense to try and get. Now, you have to hit all your picks. But I don't necessarily disagree with you because it's not really a quarterback draft that we feel very strongly about. Well, the Jets are 2-8 and last in the AFC East, and they play the Texans, which you have in your Blazing 5. They're currently 3-point underdogs, and you're taking the Texans, right, according to Fox Bet. All right, another team that's dealing with a lot of dysfunction is Chicago. Reports surfaced yesterday that Matt Nagy would be fired following tomorrow's game with the Lions. Nagy said there's no truth to that, and he is not letting the rumors get to him. Now, the Bears have never fired a coach midseason, so this would, at least in the case of the Bears, be rather unprecedented. According to Jordan Schultz, there's an overwhelming number of Bears players who want Nagy fired. Now, Jordan does a podcast with Bears receiver Allen Robinson. Another source told Schultz he has lost some of the locker room last season, but now it's gone. Nagy reportedly told players it was about them moving forward and that no one knows what tomorrow will bring. And that's in regard to a report from the Chicago Tribune that he met with the ownership prior to the Bears walkthrough yesterday. And he spoke with the team and canceled the rest of the meetings for the day. I don't like to put everything at the feet of coaches. I think the front office made a lot of bad decisions as well, and they deserve some credit for what's going on with the Bears. Matt Nagy has gotten Mitch Trubisky to the playoffs. I think Schlereth mentioned it earlier. He won 12 games with Trubisky.
Yeah.
That's impressive considering he's not a starting quarterback in the league anymore. But once you lose the locker room, then it becomes a problem that is basically not fixable, especially if you're not winning. If you're winning, you might be able to win the locker room back, but they're not. And if they lose to the Lions tomorrow, then it's really going to feel like
it's over. If Goff
plays,
Detroit wins. That's my prediction. If Goff plays, Detroit wins.
Well, Dan Campbell said he's 60% that he's 50-50, so we don't have an answer on that yet. But the Bears are 3-point favorites over the Lions tomorrow.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Who is the greatest program and the greatest coach that has not won a championship? We saw him last night, and he won again. We'll talk about that.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This Thanksgiving, you have a free chance to win $100,000 of Terry Bradshaw's money playing Fox Bet Super 6. Congratulations to Nate from Nebraska, who won Terry's 100 grand last Sunday, and you could be next. Scan the QR code now and enter your picks in the Thanksgiving challenge for your chance at the jackpot. Don't miss out. It's free to play. Download the Super 6 app now.
So I think the two games that really are fascinating this weekend are Brady goes to Indy to take on Carson Wentz, and the Colts just hammered Buffalo. And then the other game is the Rams go to Lambeau to take on Green Bay. And Carson Wentz and Matt Stafford were the two big moves, quarterback moves in the offseason. But for Wentz, it's funny about momentum. Wentz had the COVID protocol, right? He was unvaccinated. He was near somebody. Then he got hurt. And the Colts offensive line was a bit of a mess in September. And so Wentz didn't get off to a particularly good start. Plus, a lot of people were doubting that he was worth the money and worth the acquisition, right? So that was the story. And so people really haven't paid attention to what Wentz is doing because they got off to the slow start. Now, Stafford goes to the Rams. McVay showers him with praise. SoFi Stadium finally has fans. He gets a big win over Brady and the Bears early. And it's seen as a huge success. But this morning, Wentz has 18 touchdowns, 3 picks, a 97 passer rating, and 63% completion percentage. And it's getting better because he's now, those numbers include an ugly September. He has 2 ugly losses, but he has an above average offensive line, I think better than Stafford's. And Stafford got off to this praise-filled start, but he has 24 touchdowns and 8 picks, also 2 ugly losses, good passer rating, 67% completions. But if Wentz beats Brady, he'll be 7-5 with a better running game than Stafford, a better offensive line than Stafford, and an easier division. And if Stafford loses against the Packers, and it's close, I mean, this is a pick'em game, he's 7-4 without the offensive line or running game and basically trying to make OBJ work. Because I saw a story yesterday where Sean McVay said, quote, yeah, the OBJ thing is a work in progress. So this weekend's interesting. We viewed it because of the start by Wentz and the criticism of the move. It's been spotty. It hasn't been spotty. He's been playing great. And Stafford got all the praise early, but their last two games have been a mess. And so we could be looking at this weekend. Wentz has the better team, the better defense, the better momentum, the better running game, the better O-line, easier division, and Stafford's in trouble. But this story's taken a real pivot because we kind of didn't like the Wentz move. We did, but most didn't like it. And it was so ugly to start, we just buried him. Colts are really close to being one of the hotter teams in the league now. They're playing really good football. I just don't think the gap. Wentz is a bigger, more physical athlete than Stafford. Stafford's a prettier thrower of the football. It just looks prettier. McVay's clever. I don't think there's a big gap. I don't think the gap is nearly as pronounced as people think. Stafford's better. I think it's fairly close. And it'll be closer after this weekend because if Aaron plays bad toe and they get a couple of guys back, I think the Rams could lose. I was thinking about this morning, that for years and years, Andy Reid, and this is the way it works in the NFL, got a lot of criticism because he couldn't win the big game. And Andy Reid was the last great coach in America, who we knew was great, but he didn't win a championship. And because he went to Super Bowls, he got to 5 NFC championships, he went to the playoffs in Kansas City. But then he got Mahomes, and you're as good as your players, ask Bill Belichick, right? You're as good as your players. And then he got Mahomes, and now all of us are like, you know, he's as good as Belichick. Mark Few is the last great coach in college basketball, maybe basketball in the country. Because if you look at the NBA, who we consider great coaches, Popovich and Steve Kerr, you start looking around at guys, Eric Spoelstra, the great coaches have all won. They all got at least one title. Women's basketball, the top 6-7 programs are UConn, Notre Dame, Baylor, Stanford, South Carolina, top 5-6 programs. Last decade, they've all won a title. If you go to the top men's programs, Carolina, Duke, Nova, Virginia, Baylor, Kentucky, Kansas, only Gonzaga is the program you're like, oh, they don't have a title. But what's interesting is where Mahomes ended up getting Andy Reid, his title, Chet Holmgren, and the Zags crushed UCLA last night. UCLA is considered the first or second best team. Gonzaga, first or second. Gonzaga rolled them. And now Mark Few is getting Jalen Suggs and Chet Holmgren, a 7-footer out of Minnesota. They're now getting, I mean, he is a unbelievably skilled player. They're now getting the best player in the country. And I watched this game, little bits and pieces last night, like UCLA had no answers for Gonzaga's offense. And there's an argument to be made in the last 6 or 7 years. Gonzaga's the best. It's the best program in America. But they've been doing it with transfers and Washington State kids and like the fourth best player out of California. Now they're getting Jalen Suggs. Now they're getting Chet Holmgren. Now they're getting guys Duke used to get in Kentucky got. And watch out, because UCLA is old, return starters, has an NBA player, has a great coach, and they mopped the floor with an excellent UCLA team that will probably end up in the Final Four. So Gonzaga feels like, Mark Few feels like the guy he's never had as Mahomes. He finally got one last year, and he got to the final. But boy, did they look good last night. The top women's programs, the top men's programs, everybody's got their ring. Everybody's got their trophy except Gonzaga. And boy, they looked like it last night. And thank God most of those good Baylor guys went to the pros. Couldn't get past them. Order Jersey Mike's on your mobile app. Get delivery at home or free pickup even on Saturdays. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above. Takes 10 seconds to download that app. Jersey Mike's.